You're listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar Podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more. Here's your host, as always, Simon Scriver.
Hello, and welcome to this YouTube video, this podcast, this thing that I do all about fundraising and the wonderful world of charities and nonprofits and whatever else comes up. Today, I have a very special guest with me. Her name is Nikki Bell. Her name is Nikki Bell. Hello, Nikki.
Hi, Simon.
Nikki, thank you so much for joining us today. Nikki, who the heck are you? Who are you?
My name is Nikki Bell. I'm the relationship fundraising manager for the British Heart Foundation. So I look after income for corporates, individuals, and volunteers in the northeast of England. And I'm also a consultant, mentor, and trainer with Keda Consulting.
Wow. And you seem to be everywhere these days. You first came across my path, what, last year? You're big on Twitter. I've seen you speak. You seem to be at conferences. You seem to be on lots of committees. You seem to be everywhere, are you?
I try to be. I really enjoy helping others. And I think that that ends up putting me in front of a lot of different people. And yeah, so I think it was a year ago, Scottish Conference, wasn't it?
Face to face, that's where we met. But we'd seen each other online, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. And you always strike me as, I mean, this is particularly what I wanted to talk to you today about, because you always struck me as someone who was very confident, who is very happy to put themselves out there. You've given me lots of amazing tips on networking and stuff like that. And as we've kind of talked about it, it's been interesting to find out that that hasn't come very naturally to you. It hasn't come as naturally as it seems. And that kind of stuff always interests me, because people have said the same to me. I speak a lot. I do things like this, and people kind of think that I love it, or that I'm kind of, it comes easy to me. But actually, for me, I have like a massive fear of public speaking. I have a massive fear of being out there. I have lots of anxiety and all of that. Am I right in saying there's a bit of a conflict there in terms of you putting yourself out there and what's actually going on inside your head?
Yeah, I noticed that you'd nicked my networking tips for your sessions recently.
Well, borrowed.
That's fine. It's all part of the helping people thing. Yeah, so I'm great at it and I enjoy it, but it isn't something that's come naturally to me. So I was bullied quite badly in my teen years, and that ended up making me quite shy. It was quite anxious. And being a fundraiser is something that's helped me overcome those initial struggles that I had with it, basically. But it isn't something that I hop out of bed every morning and I'm like, yes, I'm going to get in front of these 200 people and I'm going to have a great time. It takes a lot of preparation. It takes a lot of positive thinking, and it takes a lot of practice. So I think people do find it quite surprising when they find out that, I'm not a extrovert, because I sometimes come across that way. And I bet you lots of people who are listening to or watching this are like, what on earth has she got to do with introverts? But actually, it isn't something that I can do naturally. It's something that I've had to learn along the way. I think fundraising helps with that, actually, because you're acting on behalf of the charity. You have this charity cloak, and you're being out there because of them, and it kind of protects you from the response of it if it doesn't go the way that you'd hoped. So over time, I'm 30 now, it's taken a while, and it is getting better, but yeah, it isn't something that I get to do quite naturally.
It's weird. I think like that what you said about representing a charity kind of prompts you to do that. I think that's true. I started in face-to-face like over 15 years ago, and I found that really good for my confidence and really good for my approach, this idea that you could stand on the street and just talk to strangers. And I think the charity side of it like gives you kind of the confidence to do that, or an excuse to do that, or a motivation to do that. And then when you start doing that, you realize actually people don't mind being stopped on the street, and people, you know, great things happen when you stop people on the street, or when you put yourself out there. So I think that's an interesting point, that charities kind of give you that reason to put yourself out there, that motivation. I mean, you have a face-to-face background as well, a little bit, and telephone, don't you?
Yeah, I started in face-to-face. I think everyone should do face-to-face at some point because you're absolutely right. It does just haul you in front of these people straight in at the deep end. Mine was different, so I didn't do street. I did door-to-door. Well, telephone initially and then door-to-door after that. And that was like a gradual step up. But you're right. Once you knock on people's doors and you are interrupting them while they're having their tea and you just have these lovely chats with them, it gives you these amazing skills to be able to build rapport quickly and just realize that people aren't scary. And some people quite like a chat. Actually, one of my best conversations that I've ever had with a supporter was through door to door because they'd spent all day alone and then all of a sudden I rocked up and was chatting with them about what they'd done during the day and I ended up chatting with them for about an hour or so and it's just those wonderful connections that you make with random strangers and being able to show them and share your passion, that's just a really lovely thing to be able to do and you do gradually over time build it up and it is wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I still remember lots of my conversations from 15 years ago in Australia, just randoms, and how lovely people were. And I remember a friend of mine in Australia said to me that it just stayed with me forever. It's like, if you put yourself out there, good things happen. And I really find that, you know, looking at your career, looking at my own career, like my own career really kind of changed when I started speaking and when I started kind of being vocal and when I started blogging opinions. You know, really putting yourself out there, it allows people in and it makes these connections happen. And it can be really scary at first. I remember doing my first blog where there was like an opinion and I was really afraid that it was just going to get like destroyed. And obviously, a chunk of people disagree with you all the time and a chunk of people agree and majority of people don't care. But it taught me that it's like you have to put yourself out there. Especially in fundraising and especially in personal development.
Yeah, I agree, but I think it's really important to realize that you and I are both. So I've been, in fundraising in the third sector now for 8 years, and you've been kicking around for a while, haven't you? But
Well, no.
no. So, anyone that was starting out or anyone that's listening to this that, they've just started or they're quite new to their career or they're still finding their feet, I guess they shouldn't compare our current situation from where they are now, but definitely there are other ways that they can put themselves out there. So I kind of, cheated a little bit with my first ever blog because it was New Year's Eve and it was all about positivity and self-love and I absolutely 100% believe in those things but there was absolutely no way that that blog was ever going to have a negative reaction either. But
Well,
over
I had quite a negative reaction to reading it. It was quite, the positive stuff was just, I don't know, it's hard to process.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. But I for the majority then, it was like a really nice positive way to start the new year. But over time, I have become more confident with sharing my experience and just my different fields of fundraising. I'm known for community fundraising and I've done a lot of strategy, I've managed face-to-face teams and done individual giving. So I've started to put out content like that just to share little bits about myself. And it does feel wonderful to help other people. And when you see the response to your blog posts or the response to your talks with everyone saying, it's benefited me and it's helped me, and actually you're absolutely right. It gives you a boost back because it reinforces that what you're doing is spot on, basically, and it does boost your confidence. So it has that benefit. But for anyone who's starting out and isn't quite ready, so it took me 7 years to start blogging. And I only started speaking this year, I think. I started going to Toastmasters last year after a horrendous public speaking experience. I thought I'm gonna have to get some proper training on this, and it has worked. For someone that's just starting out though, maybe when you're going networking, that has a benefit for your job anyway as a fundraiser. We should always be networking both within your communities but also professionally as well. And that's a really good way to boost your skills, and boost your confidence and to start testing the waters of putting yourself out there.
So how does one start with that? So say someone watching this or listening to this is a person who identifies, you know, like I did, I identified kind of 10 years ago that it's like, okay, I need to be out there more and I need to be doing this more. Where do you start? So if I decided, okay, I want to start networking, this advice makes sense. How do you start that? What's the first practical step?
Yeah, well, the beauty of networking sessions is that they want people to know about them. They want people to come. So a quick search on the internet is going to throw up some results of networking events that are near you. But obviously, as a fundraiser, your time is very limited. So you should be going to the networking events of supporters that are going to connect with your organization. So if you work for a museum, you would go to networking events where maybe at another museum or people that work in that area. And just get in touch with the host, I would say, before you bob along, and just be open and honest with them and explain maybe that you've never been before and you're wanting to test the waters, you know, who comes along, what's the usual etiquette, you know, do people get all suited and booted, is it a breakfast one? I started quite small, so I started going to networking events that were held in a pub at 7 o'clock in the morning, and everyone just kind of sat around and had their breakfast. Yeah, that's the thing with networking events, 7 o'clock in the morning. I mean, yeah, whose idea was that? I don't know. And then they were like sitting eating fry ups, and I'm standing up talking about British Heart Foundation and heart disease, and they're all putting their knives and forks down. Probably wasn't welcome. But you know, you kind of start small and then build yourself up. And actually, those people that were in that really small group were really beneficial to my role as a fundraiser, because they were the ones, the one-man bands, who were going out and doing work for other organizations, and they were actually able to make some great introductions for me. And because I went regularly, they started to warm to me and they wanted to help me out more. I was the only charity that went as well, which was a huge boost for me, because there wasn't that competition. And then once I'd started going there for a few months, I think I went there, and I still bob along now and again. But then I moved up, and there's a local business magazine now, and they do more of a professional networking group, I would say. And when I went along there, I got in touch with the host at first, but she wasn't able to share with me who was going. So I thought, right, I'm going to go first. I'm going to get there before anybody else so I can chat with her, explain to her who it was I was looking for, what I do in the community. And because she had a job to do, when these people were coming in, she was introducing them to me, and then I was able to build that confidence that way. So instead of walking up to this group of 3-5 people and trying to engage in a conversation, there was someone making those one-on-one introductions as they come in, and it does just ease you in. And I still do that now, you know, and I've been going networking for years, because it's a lovely way to just ease yourself into it if you've not been to it before. But yeah, start small and move up.
I think it's a great tip to get there early or first, so that you're not walking into an intimidating environment. And I think that's like what puts people off networking, is it can be quite intimidating. And I love that the idea of talking to the host, like the host is a human being, and you can be quite open and honest with them and tell them you're nervous, tell them you don't know how this works, you don't know what you're looking for, you don't know who you should speak to. And their whole goal in life, or their whole goal around this event, is for you to benefit from the network event. That's why they're running it. So it's good to have an open and honest conversation with them.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes when you work for a charity, you try and protect other people from those imperfections, because you want to come across as professional and like you've just got everything sorted. But actually, you're right. You know, it is all about human to human connections, as with everything brilliant in fundraising. And I think when you open up to people and you are just a bit vulnerable, they want to help you more, and it eases you in because they often share something back. And I actually relate a lot of my networking tips to kind of what I'm like when I go to a party where I don't know anyone. I would always get there first, just so I felt like I was part of the room before other people started arriving. So those early years of anxiety and being really shy has actually benefited me a lot when going networking, which is really weird.
No, I mean, that's a good comparison, which people don't necessarily make, is going to parties. Like I don't particularly like arriving at parties. I used to like partying. But I think there's stuff to learn there. You know, if you know the host, it becomes easier. If you go, you know, you don't go by yourself, you actually bring along one of your coworkers or something, that can be a good introduction, although you want to make sure you don't end up just talking to them. But I think it's just like really just trying to get into the mind of the other people there and trying to address in advance the stuff that's putting you off it, because it's crucial to fundraising, isn't it? Networking, it's an essential part of our job.
Yeah. And I think if you go in there not expecting to sell yourself, I think that's something that people do wrong at networking. They bull in, they say, I want this, this, and this, and that's not the case at all, especially if you're new. So as an introvert, networking should be wonderful because you're letting the other person do all of the talking and you prompt them with the right questions, open questions. You know, everyone starts with, so where are you from? What do you do? And then just show genuine interest as well. I mean, if it's not genuine, people are going to see through that straight away, but just be genuinely curious as to who they are and what they're about. Also, how did you get into that? How have you found that? Is it something that you've always done? And, you know, after a while, you will slowly warm up and people will be introducing you to other people. And by that point, you've kind of forgotten that you're there. And it does take time. It does take practice. So the more you get out there and the more you try it, the easier it becomes. And if all else fails, you just head to the tea station and you just joke about tea. I mean, it's 7 o'clock in the morning. Everyone's probably going to be at the tea station and you just chat with people while they're filling up. So there have been a couple of times where I've introduced people to each other and then I've realized that I'm by myself. So I just head straight there and I just have a bit of crack with the next person that comes along.
And worst case scenario, you have a cup of tea, which is always fantastic.
Exactly, exactly. And I always look for, in those situations as well, I look for the wallflower. So that's the person that's kind of standing back. They haven't really been speaking to anyone. They've been waiting for people to come to them because they've probably been to these events quite a few times. They've probably spoken to everyone in the room and they'll be able to tell you who's there, who knows who. You know, you can find out from them their experience and what they've been working on. So, you know, as someone from the Northeast, you know, we're used to just chatting to people in queues and, you know, telling people that they look nice when you see them in public bathrooms. So it is something that I know it's weird. And when you do that in London, it doesn't go down as well, but I still like to do it because if they're checking themselves out, they need a boost. But it is something that is sometimes a lot easier to do in the Northeast because we are used to people just randomly chatting to us. So I would just borrow a bit of Geordiness and just kind of get out there and have conversations with people whenever you can. Practice yeah. outside of work as well.
It's obviously very different in perhaps London where people are, I have to be careful how I describe London, but maybe you need to make sure you're in an environment where people are open to that. People are welcome to you chatting to them. But that's what networking events are all about, isn't it?
Yeah, and no one dislikes someone being nice to them. I think London has this unfair...
yeah.
Everyone's been dead canny when I go down, so yeah.
I am always very unfair about London.
Yeah,
so I'll give it another try.
You're gonna get loads of people unsubscribing now if you start.
Well, if they're from London, I don't want them subscribing. That's fine.
Okay.
No,
well,
that's
you can.
Not true.
They can sign up to my blog, charitynikki. Yeah,
well, it's not time for promos yet. you said a really interesting thing earlier about that you experienced bullying. You know, when you were younger and you think that had an impact on it. I was the same. I had a couple periods where I was bullied as a kid and then other long periods where I wasn't. And I really loved school and I loved everything about it. And it's funny when you know, when you talk to people, how many people went through stuff as a kid in Toastmasters. There's a Toastmaster friend of mine who says there's a lot of damaged teddy bears in Toastmasters. And basically everyone in Toastmasters is someone who has a fear of public speaking. And usually it derives from someone putting them down or talking shit to them or telling them to shut up. And that comes from it. And I've seen the same thing in fundraising. There's a lot of people who consider themselves an introvert or lack of confidence because of something that's happened or a lifestyle. And especially in fundraising speakers, if you start going to the conferences and you talk to speakers, all of the speakers have this like crazy insecurity. And that's why they speak, is to get that affirmation and that almost that confidence back. Have you found that in terms of people you've met? Do you think everyone has this issue within them?
I wouldn't say everyone, but I think it's wonderful that there has been a bit more of this openness online. I mean, I don't know what your Twitter feed is like, but people are talking a lot more about their mental health situations, the difficulties that they're going through. And it is really helping us open up as a community. And I think that's really comforting to realize that you're not alone. So my bullying was, you know, I had that from 11 until I left school and it was horrible. It was physical, it was mental. I ended up having to leave school early because it got so bad. And it did really impact me because I went inwards. And you're right, you know, I doubted like everything that I did, because when you're told over a long period of time that you're not good enough, you do start to believe in it. And it has taken time to build that up. And the public speaking aspect of it is something that I've only started doing recently. So I joined Toastmasters last year, absolutely loved it. And that was before I realized that you went as well. I Googled public speaking training and it came up on Eventbrite and I thought, right, I'm going to go along to that.
I thought you joined because of me.
No, sorry, Pat. So I did a legacy talk and it was awful. And I Facebook lived it as well and watched it back. And there was loads of ums and I was standing behind a podium. And I thought, actually, you know, to do my job well, I'm going to have to get a lot better at this. So no, and then I Googled it and started going. And on my first session that I went there, I won the best table topics. And for people that don't know Toastmasters, that's where you just get up and give a random 2-minute speech. And then when I joined officially as a Toastmaster, I won best speaker for my first talk. And that does give you a really big boost. And then I've started talking now at conferences about the things that I'm passionate about in fundraising, which is fundraising relationships and how to do them well. Spoke at National Convention, which was a massive, massive boost. There was 200 people there who loved it. And then I'm speaking in Slovakia next month. So there's definitely those steps there. And I think it is wonderful. I wouldn't say that I do it for the affirmation that what I'm doing is the right thing, because something that I've learned over the years as well is to stop looking for that, because it just makes you absolutely exhausted. And instead, what I've started to do is just flip my mindset. So I was in quite a big meeting this week with quite a lot of influential people in the sector. And I made a conscious effort to have some input and let my voice be heard. And my voice was probably shaking the whole time. I could definitely hear my heart hammering in my chest. And when the meeting ended, I almost asked one of my friends who was there, like, how did that go? Like, how did I come across? But I thought, do you know what? I don't care, because I feel good and I feel like I made a positive impact. And that's all that matters. So that's definitely the way that I'm trying to approach things. But I think the public speaking bit for me, it's just more about a challenge, because it does terrify me. I don't think there's any public speaker who doesn't feel a bit nervous before they get up there. But the rush that I get from it and the positive feeling that I have afterwards, like, that's what I do it for. And I do it because I genuinely love helping people, and seeing people make all of these notes and just get really involved in the session does give me a really big boost. And it energizes me to go back to my job and then put everything that I've been talking about into practice. But it is exhausting, you know, when you're constantly putting yourself out there and you're challenging yourself on a regular basis and you're putting yourself out there and you're tweeting, it is very, very tiring. So that's why I would just say to people, like, don't go here straight away, you know, work up at it, find the bits that work for you, start small. And if you do feel yourself getting tired, just take a break. People understand, just take it easy, because you're more important in all of this. You know, the internet and the public speaking can wait. So yeah, Don't exhaust yourself in trying to put yourself out there too much too soon.
It's everything in moderation, isn't it? Like, there's a whole buzz now about on like social media where it's like, always be hustling, always be working, you got to do this, you got to give it 110%. You know, there was like Mark Wahlberg recently posting that he gets up at like 3:30 a.m. to start his day, and that's how he does it. And I think so much of that is such like bullshit. Like, you need downtime and you need to moderate it. I mean, putting yourself out there allows good things to happen, but you've got to balance it, you're right, with looking after yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was you that shared that tweet about The Rock, and it was The Rock does all of this stuff to make him be the best, and he's up early and he's working out, he's doing all this, and then the next Twitter moment was, you know, The Rock is dealing quite badly with depression. I think there is definitely that link there. And, you know, we're seeing it online. We're hearing it in the conversations that we're having with people. You know, I had to take a Twitter break this year, and I have definitely slowed down on the amount of things that I do, just because you do get absolutely knackered. And, you know, I have a little boy, and he deserves all of my attention. And I think it's just shifting that focus of where you spend your time. Thankfully, I work for a really great employer, so the British Heart Foundation, who are really supportive of all of the extra stuff that I do, and they give me space and the freedom to do it. And I think that helps as well, because you don't want to worry about, you know, where you're spending your time and if it's going to be viewed badly. And they're really good. So I work from home at the moment as well, and that just allows me to pace it out. Obviously, not everybody has that opportunity. So just space it out. You know, I think you're right, like, the internet does give this impression, and because it is constant, you feel like you need to be putting stuff out all of the time, but it's just what's best for you. When I started blogging, I can't remember who told me about it, it was about the outputs and, you know, how often that you're supposed to blog. And it just said whatever felt right for you. And actually once a month has ended up being fine for me. And if I feel excited about a blog, I usually knock it out in 20 minutes and, you know, I schedule it for the future. But if I found that I was like stressing myself and just constantly, you know, I need to put something out, I'd be taking a step back and being like, right, okay, this isn't what I was doing it for. I was doing it for me and for wanting to share with people, but not to make me feel absolutely knackered. And I guess that's what happens with introverts, because they're not doing this stuff naturally. It's a challenge for them, so they just need to take it slow.
Yeah, I think that's key. I think I found that as well. It's like you almost, when you're ready or when you're in the right mindset, that's when you put yourself out there and do that, not holding yourself to task that it's like, okay, I have to do this. I have to go to one networking event a week. I have to do this. But it's using the time when you do have the strength, you know, as an introvert, when you do have the motivation to put yourself out there, you use it wisely. But then as introverts, everyone has to have the time where they retreat back into their little cave and regenerate.
Mm. So I think when we're talking about introverts, it can be anything. So it can be people that are shy, people that have anxiety, you know, people that deal with other mental health problems. It could just be people that sometimes they don't feel up to it, and that's absolutely fine. But we do need to set ourselves those goals, and we do need something to reach for. And that's why I think working for a charity is perfect, because I understand that if I don't go out there and push myself to do this, then we're not going to reach those heart research breakthroughs sooner, and people's lives are going to be affected by that. And I think that for me is a wonderful driver to, you know, put my shirt on and get out to a networking meeting, because it's for somebody else. And then once you start doing that over a time, it naturally seeps into your personal life now. And when I rock up to parties, I don't always feel as shy or anxious, or, you know, planning what time I'm going to leave before I've even got there.
Well, I mean, it is exhausting. It's exhausting dealing with people. But I mean, I found like there's a lot of pressure. You can put pressure on yourself thinking, I have to do this because someone else is relying on it. You know, I have to do this because heart research is relying on it. And I think it's a great motivation if you have it. But I still always come back to this idea that it's good for you, that, you know, good things happen to you when you put yourself out there. So depending on your motivation, whether it's to meet someone amazing, whether it's to, you know, raise lots of money for a cause that you're passionate about, whether it's to improve your career, all of that stuff happens only when you put yourself out there. So it's finding, I guess, the motivation that's right for you, mm-hmm. and then using that to do it when you're ready.
Yes, I'd agree. And, you know, volunteering at events helped for me as well, just with you mentioning find the way that works for you. So I started volunteering at the IOF's National Fundraising Convention before I started going as a delegate. And I think that was a wonderful opportunity, because you're instantly part of this crew of 20 people who are in the same position as you. And then that's how you start to speak to delegates, because you're scanning their badges in and you're getting to know who's there. So then when I did have to go as a delegate and then eventually this year speaking, I already felt comfortable with those surroundings because I'd been there before. So yeah, definitely, you know, volunteer within your own organization or with other charity events that are happening. Meet other fundraisers for Cups of Tea as well, and just get to know them individually, I guess. I meet a lot of people that talk to me on Twitter, both, you know, professionally and with work, safely in public places. Let people know where you're going, put it in your Outlook calendar. But that for me helps, because it's one-on-one before I then have to go out and talk with a group. So that helps as well.
So baby steps. You gotta start on small scale. So if someone wants to reach out to you and learn from you, you're available sometimes?
Yes. So this for me is like the wonderful thing about the charity sector, that people are always willing to chat with each other. And for me, over the last 8 years, I've had a lot of support from other brilliant fundraisers, and I want to be able to give that back. So I mentor other fundraisers. I just meet them for cups of tea. I help them if they're putting proposals forward, I'll have a look. I helped someone recently with their interview when they went to work as a regional manager for Macmillan, and she got the job, and that was lovely. So yes, I do all of that stuff. They can contact me on Twitter, which is at Charity Nikki, and I have my website blog as well, which is charitynikki.blog, where they can reach me as well.
Which is an excellent blog, and I believe I'm on your mailing list twice. That's how good it is.
No, you weren't on there the first time. That's why I
made you. 100% was.
I mean, I checked the MailChimp and you definitely weren't there.
No, but, I was getting whatever. So, yes, I too, for anyone who's listening to this or watching this, I too like to help people when I'm able. I don't think I said this to you, but I just got invited to mentor some speakers for a charity event, which I love doing. I love helping people become better speakers. So get in touch with me. But before you get in touch with me, please get in touch with Nikki because she's much better at everything. So she's on Twitter as Charity Nikki, and then her blog is charitynikki.blog, correct?
Yes.
Cool.
Thanks, Simon.
Anything else you want to promote, Nikki, or anything else you want to say before we wrap up? Have you got any cool events coming up?
I'm speaking in Slovakia in a couple of weeks. I'm at the Scottish IOF conference, which is probably where your listeners are going to be. So Scottish IOF conference on the 2nd and 3rd of October. I'm bringing my Bruce Springsteen themed relationship building session to Scotland, where I haven't decided yet if I'm actually going to teach them anything or just listen to Bruce for an hour, but I'll see how I feel on the day. And I'm part of a panel discussion on the morning about how to nail your fundraising job as well, which actually touches on a little bit of this stuff. So my section is about how to avoid burnout and find new fundraising relationships. So if they are there, bob along. And if anyone is at IFC in a couple of weeks as well, I will be hanging around and meeting people and networking and absorbing as much as possible. So give me a shout and I'll meet them for a cup of tea.
Amazing. I will be at IFC speaking as well, so I will hopefully see you there. I will hopefully see you in Scotland, and we may have a session coming up soon, allegedly, so watch the space. Can we do a little teaser like that? Watch the space.
Yeah, I think this fundraising for introverts, shy people that it doesn't come naturally to, I think there's definitely more the networking that we can touch on for this. So let's chat and let's see if we can put something together, because I would love to be able to share my experience and just open up and give a little bit more back.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Cool. So yes, so that'll come soon. So if you want to stay in touch with that, then check out my website and my mailing list at changefundraising.com. Like, subscribe, share, Logan Paul, whatever it is you need to do, then just do it and you'll get updates about that. But that's pretty much it, Nikki. Thank you so much for joining me on this. It's so lovely to have you on this.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Simon, and enjoy your Oslo strategy adventure. Yeah.
Yes, I am about to go up to the mountains with some fundraisers and help them develop their strategies. So that should be interesting.
Hi-ho.
Hi-ho. Ho-ho-ho. over here they laugh. They don't say ha-ha-ha. They say ho-ho-ho.
Oh, that's very festive.
It's very festive. It's very good. And actually, I walked past the school yesterday. It was called the North Pole School.
Oh, my God. So I'm moving to Oslo is the new news.
Oslo is the future. But that's it. Thanks so much, Nikki. It's been wonderful. And come back and join us. And when I say us, me. Come back and join me soon, won't you?
Yeah, sure.
Right. No, it didn't. Okay, goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more or get in touch with Simon. Or don't. Whatever. You're big enough to make your own decision.